Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Don and Dude.
The kids of today should defend themselves against the 70s. The Album Nerds Podcast, I'm Dude. I got Don with me. Don, how you doing? You know, we're heading into turkey season.
Gobble, gobble, motherfucker.
That sounded so friendly. I think you should put a little more stank on that there, Don.
Gobble, gobble, bitch.
There you go. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Gobble, gobble.
So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, loving on them, devouring them for Thanksgiving.
Falling asleep later.
Yeah. Waking up, listen to it again. We have a great show for you today. We're going to continue on our journey with Casey's Classic Countdowns. So Casey Kasem hosted a bunch of countdown shows, and we will each be discussing an album that has a song on the top 10 on the week of November 25th, 1978. As always, Don's going to ask us a deep question. Then we'll have some shout-outs to some other albums and album-related items we're digging. Then we'll spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out where Casey's Classic Countdowns will take us next. But this week, it's all about
1978. That's what I'm talking about!
As Thanksgiving arrives, we take a nostalgic journey to the week of November 25th, 1978, exploring two albums behind that week's top 10 hits from Casey Kasem's legendary countdown. Honoring Casey's gift for radio storytelling, this episode spotlights the classic records and unforgettable voices that filled homes and connected listeners during the holiday weekend.
Possibly adding to people's Christmas lists, right?
Oh, sure. So. Yes.
So it was an interesting time. Disco was king of the pop airwaves. Mm-hmm. So there were quite a few things to consider, some things to not consider, but still interesting. At number 10, we had You Never Done It Like That by The Captain and Tennille from their album Dream. And number 9, Time Passages by Al Stewart from the album of the same name. Was that the one that's like, Time Passages?
I think so.
I remember that from like those Time Life collections and stuff. Yeah, you know, songs of the 70s. Mm-hmm. And number 8 was I Love the Nightlife.
You Love to Boogie?
This disco round by Alicia Bridges. Yeah. Number 7, I Just Want to Stop by Gino Vannelli from the album Brother to Brother. Number 6, we'll be covering on the program. Number 5, You Needed Me, Anne Murray.
You Needed Me.
From the album Let's Keep It That Way. That's a pleasant record. You Don't Bring Me Flowers at number 4 by Barbra Streisand and Neil Diamond from the album Songbird.
Well, two powerhouses right there.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the songs of that period, especially Neil Diamond. You Don't Bring Me Flowers.
Yeah, that was good.
Thanks. It's early, so I can still do it. And number 3, How Much I Feel by Ambrosia.
Yeah.
Off of Life Beyond LA. You were close on this one,
very
right?
Close.
I listened to it a couple times. It's cool. Mm-hmm. Number 2, we're saving for later. At number 1 was MacArthur Park by Donna Summer off of Live and More. We did Donna Summer album not too long ago.
Yes, we did.
All right. I think we're ready to go. The picks are in. The 8-track is inserted. It's time to get to our cha-cha-cha choices.
You choose me?
Number 6. At number 6 on the countdown from November 25th, 1978, was a song by Chic from their album Say Chic.
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 I thought you said Say Chic.
Ha ha.
Yo. Nice. Man, that's the worst, and I just can't stop doing it.
So it's the second studio album by the band, formed in 1976 by guitarist Nile Rodgers and bassist Bernard Edwards. They were both session musicians from New York City before forming the band. They recruited drummer Tony Thompson, and they use a large cast of vocalists, including Alpha Anderson, Lucy Martin, Diva Gray, David Lasley, Robin Clark, and Luther Vandross.
Whoa, yes. Nice. We got to get to a Luther album someday.
Yeah. So here's the number 6 song in the nation that week. It was actually the biggest gainer. It went up like 31 notches that week.
Bet you Casey was excited about this. Sure.
Here's Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards. All right, so this is Le Freak.
Is this in French?
Yes.
I think you mean we.
You want me to translate it for you?
Yes, please do.
I like it when a song starts with the hook.
I like it when it starts with a countdown. But yes, I do like to start with the hook too.
Yeah, so Le Freak supposedly refers to, I guess Rogers and Edwards were denied entry to Studio 54, despite being invited by Grace Jones.
Studio 54 was like a really hot club in New York City in the disco era. All the celebrities and
I would have been there.
Musicians were there. I'm sure you would.
So the song was actually titled Fuck Off.
And why is that?
In response to like the doorman, but they changed
That's rude.
Yes.
Man was just doing his job.
So they changed it to Freak Out, you know, for obvious reasons.
Sure.
And so the refrain, Le Freak, C'est Chic, became the hook and the album title. So all the album is written by Rogers and Edwards. It's, I don't know, I mean, it's a kind of an epic dance song, although relatively simple and straightforward, but it just has that, you know, that groove. I mean, the two of them together, like the Nile Rodgers, chicka flicka, whatever kind of, you know, guitar playing that he does.
Chicka flicka, is that like the official?
I'm not sure. I think there is a, I forgot what he does call it. It's not boom chicka boom. But yeah, so his unique guitar playing, and then Edwards is just a great like funk bassist.
I think the problem with the song is that it undersells Chic as a band. Because it was the hit and it is tied in people's minds to the disco era and bell bottoms and silliness. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that happens with hit songs for any group, but it's just a taste of what they're capable of as a team of musicians, as well as a team of producers that do some really great stuff throughout this record.
Yeah. I mean, the lyrics are so, I mean, throughout the album, I mean, they're pretty corny or trite.
Or not important. I mean, it's just a hook to for a listener to grab onto, but it's really more about the groove.
Yes, absolutely. And it's all just meant to be positive, right? We did a Chic record before, and I remember, you know, kind of saying that it seemed like it was a continuation of like that 60s flower power, you know, everybody get together and be at peace and have
that
fun.
Album predated this one, correct?
No, that came after.
So that came
that
after?
Was Risque, okay. Which also sounds French. So that was the follow up that had Good Times. Yeah. So Le Freak, I think, is supposed to be like a dance, kind of like the Twist or the Mashed Potato or something, you know, one of those songs about dances.
Why don't you name some stuff that are actual disco moves, man?
The
Hustle.
Oh, yep, The Hustle. There you go. Good. Let's go to the opening cut on the album. This is Chic. Come on, Cheer. Everybody. Give me a C. C. Give me an H. H. Give me an I. I. Give me a C. C. They never ask you what it spells. That's
Yeah, that would have been nice. What's that spell? Chick. No.
Kind of reminds me of something that would have been on like the Electric Company or something.
Maybe.
So this kicks off the album. It's more just kind of, I guess, celebrating Chic. I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah, I know, but it's more of a, it's funkier. It's more, I think, flashing the what they really are at their base, which is a funk R&B band. They're not a disco group. They're a groovy, funky R&B band, and that's what they explore on most of the album. It just happens that if they put a couple little stringy stuff on it or whatever, it can be a disco hit, and that's good for the bank.
Yeah. I think listening back, you might think that these are just typical disco records, but I mean, really, I think these songs kind of shape that disco sound.
Yes. And we might get into it later, but it's shaped danceable pop music throughout decades, 80s and 90s, and even up until recently, you know, with Nile Rodgers is still very involved in music and production.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I think Chic is probably one of the most like sampled groups in the hip hop world. Right. Was there a song from Say Chic that you thought was particularly chic?
Yeah, I liked I Want Your Love. Let me listen. I'll share my dreams and make you see how really they are. shimmering and orchestral, and it's just so interesting and fun to me looking back and thinking about. I mean, I wasn't really involved in this, or I was alive, but I had no knowledge of the things going on around me at the time. But those disco strings, it's like this is the new ballroom, you know, the new ballroom dancing.
That's interesting. And there's, I mean, strings are so dominant in the disco era, even, you know, Barry White and the Love Unlimited Orchestra, even the Bee Gees stuff from Saturday Night Fever.
Absolutely. Yep. It kind of balances out the semi-rebellious Le Freak, giving kind of a, like showing that Chic is more than just disco dance songs. I mean, I know this is a, has a disco vibe to it, but it's really a love song, you know, a, expressing intense longing, complicated love, you know, the usual suspects in these songs, but it captures the feeling, the sort of whirling dervish of of relationships and the feelings, you know, people have romantic feelings, especially early on, that like magical sensation. So yeah, I think it's a great composition, well executed, produced, and well balanced for just a nice, clean, pleasant listening experience.
Yeah. So the lead vocals are Alpha Anderson.
Great name.
Yeah. Apparently, the song was intended for Sister Sledge.
Interesting.
So Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards were producing the Sister Sledge album at the same time, We Are Family. And I believe they wrote We Are Family as well. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so we get to the end of the album. Here's Funny Bone.
Sounds like the after party.
Yeah, it does. It is kind of a more chill groove, I think.
It's got a real chill Z to it, you know? Inside joke.
So
no one cares.
this is an instrumental, although it has, you know, people talking in it. I'm not sure who's actually talking. It kind of sounds like it might be Nile Rodgers, but he says, you know, just one more thing. Remember, the world's a circus. Don't you be the clown.
Wow, that's deep.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, the depth of the album, I think, comes from the grooves and the, you know.
Not the words.
No. No, absolutely.
That's okay. I mean, you don't expect a, you know, it's an apple oranges kind of situation, I think, when you're talking about pop music. And we've kind of brought this up throughout these KC Classic Countdowns because we're, of course, going to be hitting a lot of pop music. Mm. And the criteria for what makes good is different than, you know, like Pink Floyd, The Wall versus something like this. You know, they're just not, they're just completely different animals.
Right. But you can appreciate both.
Exactly.
So this is a good time to rewind and reflect on Say Chic.
Chic. I'm going to ride that bit to the very end.
So I'll start with my clickbait headline. Rodgers A. Edwards Sont Fantastique.
God. That actually hurt me a little.
So, yes.
What the hell does that mean?
Rodgers and Edwards are fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Yes. but they really are. I mean, I'm just such a sucker for this, just the two of them together. I mean, they really shape this, the sound of funk and disco and dance and pop in the 80s. You know, I mean, we hear this guitar playing on Bowie records. And, and I mean, it's still, I mean, anytime somebody brings out the funk, I feel like it sounds like this. So, I'm not sure why I love it so much, but, you know, I mean, this album and the other one we did are, you know, really have become favorites of mine.
Yeah, it's more than just disco. Like, there were plenty of other artists at the time that were like one-hit wonder disco groups and, you know, Disco Duck and other things that were just trendy, you know, items, but there's more to this than that. That leads me to my clickbait headline. Before you call it, and imagine some very dramatic finger quotes here, just disco, listen closer. Say Chic.
Chic.
It's a masterclass in precision groove engineering.
Wow.
Smooth, confident, stylish. Huh. It's disco. It's like refined disco. the grooves are tight and mechanical, but the emotion is warm and human. And even the deep cuts feel intentional. You know, Rodgers and Edwards were designing an entire sonic world, not just chasing hits.
I really like the idea of groove engineering, because it is like I picture them kind of in the studio.
Yeah, like blueprints. Yeah. And like, okay, we're going to put the bow, the chicka chicka wah here and the bow bow here.
Very good. Killer to Filler. I mean, obviously, you know, the two hit songs that we covered, you know, I think are, you know, among the best. But I mean, one of my favorites is the one of the other instrumentals, the Savoir Faire, which is another one that's a little quieter. Kind of reminds me of like the Love theme, the Love Unlimited Orchestra.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this kind of music, when it's done well. You know, I don't care for instrumentals, generally speaking. I think it's filler. Mm. But in this case, it's not. I mean, there's so much going on. The passionate artistry can be felt, even though there's not someone singing and saying, I'm passionate and I'm artistic, which sometimes I need, but not here. At Last, I Am Free. I really love the sound of that. It's just so, I don't know, like moving and emotional and nice, sophisticated arrangement, lush strings, and the vocal layering and counter melodies, just very strong composition on it. And it just feels good.
Yeah, it all really does. I mean, fillers, I don't really, no. You know, I mean, maybe sometimes you win, but I mean, that one's good too.
I mean, if anything, it'd be the closer.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Funny bone. But that kind of sets the tone of, you know, I like that it ends that way with the party's over. Mm-hmm. You know, the night is winding down is what it kind of felt like to me. And I dig that.
Yeah, that's right. Because the beginning, it's like they're riling you up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end with the chill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Production. So this was produced by Rodgers and Edwards, who both have gone on to do a lot of production work. So I think they did a good job of keeping live performance, because I think some of, you know, maybe your weaker disco tracks are, you know, feel very repetitive and computerized or something. And
well, they weren't computerized, right. But they definitely were felt manufactured.
Yeah,
just like anything, you know, a fad starts and then everyone starts making disco infused songs.
Rodgers and Edwards described themselves as commercial kings who would use any trick available in the studio. Right? So they were, trying to innovate. Supposedly every new project, they would buy a piece of gear, you know, to mess around with.
Sure.
So they're, you know, despite its precision, I still think they, you know, provide a kind of an organic feel, right? So, yeah. I mean, it does feel like live performance.
Mm-hmm. It just feels focused, crisp guitars, articulate bass, the drums are sharp, like everything's right. And the album's enduring freshness kind of comes from its restraint.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's overdone, nothing's muddy. The flourishes feel like they belong. They don't feel like showing off.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, thinking about a Parliament record, you know, those get out of control.
Well, that's because that's the funk unleashed, like
right. And so this is funk under wraps or something.
it's grown up funk.
Ooh,
you know,
sophisticated,
sophistafunk.
There you go. I like that.
I'm sure someone else has said it before.
Right. Replay value.
Fuck yeah, bitch. Yeah.
Oh, that was my note. yes, I will be grooving to this forever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, each listen does reveal new details in the arrangements if you're into that.
Mm-hmm.
But even non-disco fans, I think, can drop the needle almost anywhere on this record and find something to love. There's something's going to make you tap them toes.
Yes. And then Legacy. I mean, as I said before, I mean, Chic is, you know, among the most covered bands, I think, or sampled bands, I should say. And again, both of these guys, you know, became, you know, big producers, particularly Nile Rodgers. I mean, he shaped so much of so many hits of the 1980s, including Madonna and David Bowie. But yeah, I mean, this, I think also you can get from here to Michael Jackson Off the Wall, I think.
Yeah. Yes. This kind of mature disco allowed, I think, some more traditional R&B artists to find a foothold into a new sound that was inspired by disco rather than immersed in it.
Yeah. And there aren't that many artists that sort of live on from the disco era, you know, who have a legacy. And Chic definitely does. You know, they transcend the era.
Yeah. It's a landmark album, I think, of disco's golden age, but it is like a blueprint for groove-based pop moving forward, like we've said a few times, but influencing artists from, like, I think Nile Rodgers recently worked with Daft Punk in the last, you know, 10, 20 years. Beyonce, Dua Lipa, like all that stuff has its foundation.
Say Chic remains a masterclass in stylish groove, blending sharp musicianship, inventive production, and infectious rhythms that continue to resonate across generations and genres. Check it out.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Time again for Deep Questions by Don. So since we started exploring the classic Casey countdowns, we've been kind of reviewing our own countdowns from the various years. You know, what was our favorite things at the time? How about Thanksgiving? What is on the top of your Thanksgiving chart?
As a child, putting black olives on my fingertips was
classic.
Because we, you know, family gathering, the rare occasion that you'd have like the relish tray out, they used to call it.
Yeah.
With the, you know, olives and carrot sticks and pickles and whatever. But me and my cousins filling our fingers with black olives is probably the highlight of Thanksgiving back then. Now it's just, you know, chilling.
Yep.
Yeah. The football's fun. I don't know. I'm not really a huge Thanksgiving guy. How about you, Don?
Well, I mean, it's an excuse to eat a lot and to drink a lot, you know, which, you know, so I have no problem with that.
I don't need an excuse.
That's true. That's true.
At least eat a lot.
Right. I was thinking, I tend to watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles around this time because that was, you know, set at Thanksgiving, and it's Steve Martin's character trying to get home for Thanksgiving. So that's become sort of a tradition. Also, the movie Home for the Holidays, you ever see that with Holly Hunter and Robert Downey Jr.?
Never saw it.
Kind of a dark, meant to be sort of a realistic you know, idea of coming home for Thanksgiving, and you know, her parents are crazy and her sister's a bitch, and you know, it's
sweet. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, what's on the top of your Thanksgiving chart? Let us know on our social media like Instagram and Facebook at Album Nerds.
So I did my best to find something that's like rock music, at least to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
We got Foreigner, a British-American rock band formed in New York City in 1976 by guitarist Mick Jones. From I guess he was in a band called Spooky Tooth previously. I haven't heard of Spooky Tooth, but that's just a great name. multi-instrumentalist Ian McDonald, who's came from King Crimson. And then we've got vocalist Lou Graham, bassist Ed Gagliardi, drummer. I love that name. I do. I don't know why. Drummer Dennis Elliott and keyboardist Al Greenwood. And of course, Jones, McDonald, and Elliott are British. So the name Foreigner reflected the, you know, mix of Americans and Brits.
Oh.
Their 1977 self-titled debut, featured like Feels Like the First Time and Cold as Ice, launched them to commercial success. So this was their follow-up, Double Vision, released June 20th, 1978. By 78, the band, you know, a whole year later, the band had started to better develop its blend of melodic hard rock, polished production, and soaring powerful vocals from Lou Graham. This album went 7 times platinum. A lot of it was on the back of the title track, which came in at
number 2.
The week of November 25th, 1978. Why don't we listen to a little bit of Double Vision? That's what I'm here for. If I'm listening to Foreigner, that's what I want. So this was track 6, the beginning of side 2 on the original LP. So a good way to start off the second half of an album. Written by Lou Graham and Mick Jones. Peaked at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100. Contrary to some interpretations, the song isn't just about being drunk or high, which is, I think, what everyone always assumes. Lou Gramm has said that the title came from a hockey game incident. A New York Rangers goalie was knocked out and suffered actual double vision. And I guess the announcers just kept talking about double vision, and him and Mick were watching it and thought that'd be a cool song name. Metaphorically, it can represent intense states of mind, life's highs and lows, maybe band life on the road, that kind of stuff. But I'm sure intoxicants were part of the inspiration. Don, what are your thoughts on double vision?
Yeah, I've always liked the hook of it, kind of the interplay of the guitar and keyboards. And that's something I think Foreigner perfected. You know, I think sometimes they're in unison, sometimes they're like kind of complementary parts, but
yeah, it's like a duet between Mick Jones and Lou Gramm.
Yeah. You know,
the guitar being the Mick Jones representation.
Right. But yeah, you know, I think I, you know, maybe didn't appreciate, you know, maybe how innovative they were in making keyboards fit in a rock setting.
Yeah. Yeah, and the production with Keith Olsen and Mick Jones and Ian McDonald, but Keith Olsen having worked with Ozzy, Whitesnake, Fleetwood Mac, The Grateful Dead, Rick Springfield. So, I mean, pop and rock and everything in between, and those elements are all here. And Double Vision, I think, is a really good example of that. Mm-hmm. The opening track, however, so the beginning of Side A, I think, kicks it off with even a little bit more swagger and intensity. Why don't we listen to a little bit of Hot Blooded? So this one, written by Lou Gramm and Mick Jones, eventually reached number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. But, you know, it's kind of like a little Stonesy, a little Kiss, sounds a little bit like a Kiss song potentially. And I love how the album kicks off with this. It's probably my favorite song. Lyrics are about passion, desire, sexual tension, probably, you know, groupie type stuff as well. I got a fever of 103 is just like a great line. Yeah, what are your thoughts on Hot Blooded?
It actually, and I saw somebody else mention this, it reminded me of Free, you know, the band Free that Paul Rogers was in. Yeah, somebody suggested that, you know, maybe that kind of gave Gramm permission to sing in more like a gruff manner. So he's more gruff on this song than typical. I do too. It's a pretty straightforward rock song. You know, there's not as keyboardy as some of the other tracks. Yeah, it's a you know, strong rocking, you know, opener to the album.
But yeah, I mean, this song has just become so emblematic of 70s arena rock. And I think either you're doing the overbite groove into it, or you're rolling your eyes. Like, I don't think there's anywhere in between when it comes to Foreigner and songs like this. Where are you on that scale?
There was probably a time where I was maybe more rolling my eyes at it, but yeah, now I appreciate it and enjoy it. You know, I've thrown out a lot of my hangups.
Yeah, me too.
But my introduction to Foreigner was like, I Want to Know What Love Is, and my dad blasting it in the car stereo, you know, so it just, they just seemed so uncool to me that it took many years to, you know, to shake that.
But yeah, but like Foreigner 4, which is before the I Want to Know What Love Is, that was, for me, that's the touch point. That's when they had some of their best songs. But this is this is like building. I feel like they're still building what the band is and playing around with different kinds of sounds. Speaking of that, Don, what are you bringing to the table? What song do you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to, you know, highlight one of the kind of different cuts, I guess you could say. This is I Have Waited So Long.
I've been searching for you everywhere, calling you, but you were never there.
Is this guy British by any chance?
Yes. So, so you can probably tell that is not Lou Gramm singing. That's actually Mick Jones providing the lead vocals. He also does another track on the album, Back Where You Belong,
which sounds like John Lennon.
Yeah.
And this one sounds like Paul McCartney.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I would say this is maybe more McCartney-ish, very Beatles-ish. And after hearing those two songs, I can kind of hear the Beatles, you know, in some of the other cuts as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if, in the rock world, people kind of returned to the Beatles in the late 70s? Because I feel like maybe at some point people were kind of pushing away from them or rebelling mm-hmm. against the Beatles, and maybe they're back to embracing them.
Well, these bands would have grown up on the Beatles, as teenagers, so I'm sure heavily influenced by. And, Mick Jones wrote a lot of his own stuff besides the things he worked on with Lou Gramm, and I think those two songs are results of that. And then the kind of more melancholy groove, I think they believed might fit Mick's voice better.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's effective, and I think it's a nice kind of break in the album from either the rockers or the more poppy numbers. So I think it works. Yeah.
I could do with one.
Okay.
One non-Lou Gramm.
Okay.
But I want to hear Lou Gramm.
That's
what I'm listening to Foreigner for, to be honest.
I understand. So one Ringo track. And
well, Mick was, certainly very involved in the songwriting and stuff, and I understand the instinct of wanting to express the feelings of a song if you're feeling like you're the better to do it. But it's just, I thought it was cute when I was listening to the record for the first time on the first one, but then when I heard another one, I'm like, come on, man. So that's just me. All right, so to close out the album, we get a little, there's some progginess here, right, Don?
Yes, there's definitely prog. Maybe it's the King Crimson influence.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we see it here and there, but we do get a taste on the closer, Spellbinder.
That come from this.
Yeah, I mean, definitely atmospheric, mystical, she's, the whole you put a spell on me thing, and he's so entranced by her because she has placed a spell on him. It's corny, but I like it.
I do
it
too.
Works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the layered keyboards, the fluid guitar lines, the kind of mid-tempo seductive rhythm, it works. I mean, I like how they use Lou's vocals here. Like, it's the perfect blend of his ballad voice and his rock voice. It's nice to hear both on one song.
Yeah. I really like this track. I mean, it's not one of the hits, but I think it's a standout cut. Some people argue that it didn't really fit because maybe it is just a little too prog, compared to some of the other ones. But, as you said, I think it's so well executed, and his voice sounds great. The guitar's nice. I don't know. I like it.
I think, for any critics of it, it fits just as well as Beatles-esque songs, sure. Right? I mean, and that's, these bands of this era had a little bit more room to play within the rock and roll sphere, right? You could do a little prog and do a little Beatles-y pop and then do some more harder rock. That was before we were so spellbound by subgenres and stuff and having to stay in your lane. And I think this era, these bands got to play around a little bit. And I think when people look back, then it's like, oh, they were sellouts. But I don't think that's true. I think it was just finding themselves. This is their second album.
Yeah.
They're figuring out what they were, and they had some hits, some slight misses, but overall it's pretty cool.
It doesn't sound like a second album. I mean, they sound mature.
Yep. It's good stuff. So why don't we take some time to rewind and reflect on Double Vision? I'll kick it off with me clickbait headline.
I like that.
I just like the pirate talk. From hook-heavy radio hits to experimental arrangements, prog touches, and two vocalists, Double Vision captures a band finding its true identity. The album's a tight, polished, high-energy rock album built on riffs, hooks, and powerhouse vocals. Check, check, check. Pure late 70s FM radio,
Mm-hmm.
Lou Gramm just continues to assert himself and what he's vocally capable of. And I think he's very underrated as a singer and a influencer on vocal style in the rock realm, especially that early 80s rock realm, your Survivors, your Journeys, all of that stuff. I think Lou Gramm was a innovator in some of how to approach those songs vocally. Tender and tough at the same time.
And like singing high before everybody was singing high in the 80s.
Yep.
Yeah. My clickbait headline is, I've been waiting for an album like this to put Foreigner into my life.
I've been waiting.
Yes.
I'm surprised you didn't try singing it.
I've been waiting. It's a tough
one.
So I, as I said, I had no interest in Foreigner at all growing up. Yep. And, you know, I've slowly warmed up to them. And I did see them live, not with Lou Gramm, but with, you know, their new person. But I was impressed then. But I've, you know, I haven't dug into an album. And I think this was a good place to start because, I mean, it's really well executed. And I think it has all of the elements that make Foreigner great. And maybe it's just not quite as polished as like Four. You know, which has like the Mutt Lange stuff all over it.
Yeah, Mutt Lange gets involved. And that was 1981 when this particular sound became solidified.
Yeah.
And Mutt Lange was really good at doing that with bands that had a lot of raw talent. Killer to Filler. I mean, the Killers are obviously like Hot Blooded and Double Vision.
Blue Moaning.
Yeah.
Blue Day. That's a great song.
Yeah, talk about that one.
So, you know, kind of more like a power ballad. Not quite, though, because it has a, you know, a pretty decent tempo to it. But that's got the, you know, kind of the shimmering keyboards that I like.
I think it's got that blend that we were talking about where it is there's some Beatley touches, the dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, feels like Sgt. Pepper-y, just a tiny bit. And I think it's the right blend of those elements. I'd say it's a medium tempo ballad. I mean, it's a bit of a rocker, not a hard rocker, but.
I think, I don't know if it was when I was listening to that song or one of the others, but I remember at some point thinking of Wings or, you know, reminding me of McCartney solo.
There you go, yeah. Tramontane.
Love it.
They threw an instrumental on this thing.
Yeah.
And that's where the real progginess lives.
Yep.
Unexpected. At first, I was a little pissed off, but then I'm like, you know what? This is cool. And then on subsequent listens, I looked forward to it. And it was a good song. Any fillers?
I don't know. I mean, maybe the other Mick Jones track, maybe the Back Where You Belong. I don't know. Like you said, maybe just one of them would have been appropriate.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're fine.
Yeah,
they're fine. It's just, I wanted Lou.
Yeah. So,
but they're good. They're good songs. They're not, I don't think they suck or anything.
Okay.
I felt like they were just a tiny bit out of place. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the whole second half of the album is interesting because again, it's so cool that it starts with Double Vision. So you're starting off with this like cornerstone piece of the album and then they get to play around a little bit and then they close it out with Spellbinder, which, as we discussed, is real nice.
Mm-hmm.
Production, Keith Olsen's production is forward, clean, built around the guitar and vocal clarity. Those are the keys to success here. Lou Gramm is kind of mixed wide, so his voice sounds huge without drowning out the band.
That's true.
Guitars are punchy, kind of a precursor to the 80s hard rock aesthetic. I think this is, like we said, kind of set that tone. And the keyboards are subtle, but they thicken the mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a fuel additive.
Yeah. And there are some strings thrown in there as well. Sometimes it's hard to tell if they're keyboards or strings, but I guess the string arrangements were by David Paich. But yeah, they're used effectively.
So, Donald, replayability. You there? Did Foreigner spellbind you?
Yeah. I'll definitely listen again. I'm probably going to start checking out some of the other albums. It's hard to imagine them being better than this one, but I suppose it's possible. I know like Four was the one that sold like 100 times platinum or something. But
yeah, that is a couple of my favorites. Urgent and Jukebox Hero were two of my favorite Foreigner songs as a kid. So I mean, obviously strong replayability. First half is strong. Side two kicks off strong. It's good stuff. Legacy-wise, I mean, this cemented Foreigner's place among American rock giants. They already had hits on their first record, and they just kept building.
Yep.
You know, to be able to do it on your second record, to have three charting songs, that's a big deal back then. And their polished yet heavy sound helped shape arena rock and influenced the entire early 80s melodic rock boom, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could lump them in with like REO Speedwagon too, probably, and Journey, and
even Jefferson Starship,
sure,
or just Starship.
Oh, you know
what Starship became from its 60s beginnings.
And it was cool with that arena rock or stadium rock. They could still dabble in all of those things. You could throw some prog in there. You could throw some metal.
Yeah.
You know, it had a pretty wide window to play within, I think, as long as it was hooky and melodic.
So Double Vision finds Foreigner becoming citizens. Stay back, Ice. It's a hard rock powerhouse from start to finish, and it cements Foreigner's knack for arena-ready hooks, soulful ballads, and the timeless blend of grit and melody. A record that still rocks decades later. Check it out.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, so on your journey back from 1978, did you stash anything in your bell bottoms? What?
What? First of all, bell bottoms were notoriously tight at the top, so I don't think you were fitting anything in your pockets.
Could you?
So it would have been in the bell part.
yeah, down by the boot. The
sure.
Anyway, what are you digging?
That was a stretch. I'm not digging your segue. Yeah. I mean, I stumbled upon something. I'm not really usually seeking out new Christmas or holiday music, but one did catch my ear, and it's The Pretty Reckless with Taylor Momsen's Pretty Reckless Christmas. Now, The Pretty Reckless is a band fronted by Taylor Momsen. They're like a hard rock band with melodic edge, and The Pretty Reckless Christmas is a 6-track holiday EP that mixes rock-powered originals with seasonal nostalgia, featuring reimagined rock-driven version of Where Are You Christmas, which we'll play a little bit of right now. Yeah, so Taylor Momsen was the little girl in the Grinch movie from 2000.
Ah.
And so the song starts off with the original, and she kind of duets with her child self.
Huh.
And
interesting.
I guess a couple of songs on this are from that film remade, and then some new originals like Christmas Is Killing Me. I mean, they're a good rock band. I have a couple of their records, and just thought it was kind of fun that she was, you know, I think she's probably in her 30s now and probably looking back on childhood and reassessing and whatnot. So I thought it was a cool way to celebrate holidays with a little edge.
Yeah. I think EP is the right length for Christmas.
Yeah. As always, I like to present something and listen to something that is in my personal album collection. This one I have on vinyl and CD. It's various artists. Saturday Night Fever original movie soundtrack, being in 1978, and the disco stuff, it kind of struck a chord, so I listened to this one a couple times. I've got the vinyl is not in great shape, but it's a double album. Lots and lots of tracks, released in November of 1977. 40 million copies sold of this thing.
Huge.
But the Bee Gees have multiple tracks on it, which I love. But then you've got Cool in the Gang, and A Fifth of Beethoven is on there.
I love that.
Yeah. It's. I mean, if you want disco music, this one soundtrack album will cover you. While we listen to a little bit of Night Fever. So also featuring by the Bee Gees, Stayin' Alive and How Deep Is Your Love. So, you know, you get it all here. And that, there's that guitar.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fun nostalgia. But like I said, it can help you appreciate disco music as music, not just bell bottoms and dancing.
Yep.
What about you, Don? What you digging?
So when I'm feeling adventurous, sometimes I'll switch my Pandora to newly released mode or something, and so it'll just play.
Wow. Yeah, that Pandora life be crazy.
Yes. So I've recently discovered a band who aren't new. They're called Magic Wands, and they have a new album called Cascades. So they were from it says Nashville bred, so I guess they were born in Nashville, but they live in Los Angeles. Chris and Dexy Valentine, they're a duo, kind of dream pop, dancey, new wavy sounding stuff that I would typically like. Supposedly the name actually comes from, you know, being given a magic wand as a gift. I don't know if Chris gave it to Dexy as a, you know, as a Valentine's Day present or something, but sounds romantic.
yeah.
Well, here's the song Time to Dream.
I was expecting Leviosa, not Leviosa.
Okay. Got some U2 rhythm there, or the Adam Clayton bass, the do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. You know. Very, you know, post-punky. All right, and another one, somebody I never cared about, but have been paying a little more attention to lately, thanks to Pandora, Vince Gill, right? Kind of a big country artist. I feel like he lives at the Ryman, or whatever you call it, the Opry. He's like in the Hall of Fame there or whatever. Always, you know, I like his voice, you know, it's got a really soft tenor. Which group was he in? Pure Prairie League or something early
on? I think so.
Yeah. So he's been in the business, I guess, for 50 years.
Damn.
And so to celebrate that, he's doing a series of EPs every month. And so I think this is the second one. It's called Secondhand Smoke. So the whole thing, it's 50 Years From Home is the name of the EP series. And this one is called Secondhand Smoke.
Okay.
And I guess there are guests like Ashley McBride and Derek Sutherland and, you know, people like that on it. Here's a song called March On, March On. Reach on, brothers. Reach,
sisters, stay strong. Reach on. Still sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I kind of like him doing a gospel-y thing. But he does, you know, he comes across as being kind of square, you know, which is probably why I didn't gravitate to him. But he just has a nice voice. And
I think that's part of the charm is it's approachable because he comes off a little square.
Yeah. So kind of, I mean, pretty ambitious to release an EP every month. I'm not sure how long he's going to do it for, but good for him. So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about time on the show when I'm reminded of the words of Sir Casey Kasem.
Was he knighted?
He should have been. On this Thanksgiving weekend, let's remember to be truly thankful for all the good things in our lives. Good health, good friends, family, and music. From all of us at American Top 40, I hope you have a safe and happy holiday. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Man, sorry, Casey. I tried. With that in mind, let's bring out the wheel of musical discovery to see where Casey's classic countdowns is going to take us next.
Next time, we're spinning back to classic Casey countdowns. You'll be taking the biggest hits from this week in 1989 and diving into two albums they came from, exploring the sounds, stories, and artists that defined the final chapter of the 80s.
Oh boy, 1989.
Where? Uh-oh, could be some Milli Vanilli.
Yeah, it was a very pop-driven time. I'm hoping we can find some rock and roll.
Yeah, we've been pretty good at mining for gold. So
it's tough, though. Tougher at the top of the charts as by 89, tastes had started to sharpen where people were into particular things and genres more so than in the 70s. So, yeah, this should be a challenge.
Well, what is your favorite record from 1989? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and other social media at Album Nerds. And you can visit albumnerds.com to listen to all 315 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And talk about us at the Thanksgiving dinner table.
Yes. Say you're thankful for us during prayers. Yes. Well, thank you, as always, for listening to the Album Nerds Podcast. Have a great turkey day, and we'll catch you next time in 1989.
Podcast hero! That's what we're... No?
It sounded like you were in pain.
Yes, it did hurt a little bit.
Yeah,
it looked like it.
He had one turntable!
My God, Lou Grammy or not, but who is? See you next time.